Yeah, I'm fixing to turn 70, so, you know, you either do something or sit home and wait to die, and I'd rather do something, so. And then Jasmine just came in and put on one of the great athletic performances I've ever seen.
Well, hello, everybody. Jason Dennis here, your host for the Run the Race podcast. For the last now 4.5 years, we've finally done it. We've hit episode number 200, and I have a very special guest for you. In fact, my first repeat guest, and he's actually been on twice before, so this is the third time around for Lazarus Lake. Legendary, just amazing, inspiring ultra runner and race director for the famous Barkley Marathons in Tennessee, just not too far from us here in Georgia where I am. So appreciate you listening to Run the Race as we talk about fitness and faith, and have been for now 200 episodes. And we have had 65,000 listeners. Around 1,000 actually on my last Lazarus episode, one of the first episodes I had, that being the most popular. This podcast has been listened to in 50 different countries, including about 1,000 folks in Canada and almost that much in Ireland, Germany, and Australia. But again, a lot of the listeners being in the United States. And so appreciate you listening. If you go to Apple Podcasts, the little purple icon, go down to the bottom of Run the Race. I'd love for you to write a review. Tell us what you think about this, and the good, the bad, and the ugly. And love to for you to subscribe to it on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you listen to these podcasts. But I want to get to this conversation I had with Lazarus Lake, also known as Gary Cantrell. Right now, he is actually walking across the country, across America. It's what he calls LazCon 2024. Now, he is the mastermind behind the Barkley Marathons, described as the most grueling foot race in the entire world. He's also a recent member of the American Ultra Running Hall of Fame. And he's an icon in running altogether. He's almost 70 years old now, and he's taking something he did back about 6 years ago. He's doing a transcon, a walk across the United States that began in Delaware almost a month ago, and he's headed towards San Francisco. So he's got close to about 500 miles under his belt with about 2,500 miles to go, hoping to finish by the end of August. And he's posting on social media all along the way. A lot of quips. He's very, very funny guy, very introspective, very intelligent. And so you're going to hear some great insight from him about what it's like so far during this transcon. But we also talk about the Barkley Marathon and how that just ended about a month ago. And it was a historic one. In fact, they had 5 finishers, the most they've ever had. And they had a British runner, Jasmine Paris, the first woman to ever finish the Barkley Marathons. And it's a 60-hour time limit. She did it with 99 seconds to spare. And by the way, back on episode 26, this is number 200, but back on episode 26, when I talked to the iconic race director, Lazarus Lake, about his new virtual races and about Barkley, I wanted to give you kind of a quick snippet right now about what he said when I asked about, will a woman ever finish the Barkley Marathons? Take a listen.
Do you ever foresee a woman completing Barkley? Somebody mentioned to me Courtney Daywalter, maybe. I mean, is that something you foresee maybe happening in the future? Or I mean, this is such a challenging thing. Who knows? It's hard to predict.
So far, there hasn't even been a woman come close. There's only one woman has ever gotten out on the fourth lap in all these years. It requires the complete set of skills to do the race. You have to be a good navigator. You have to be able to take care of yourself in all manner of weather and go out equipped with a pack you can carry, but you still have everything you need if it's 10 degrees or 80 degrees. Because the last year we ran it, it was a 65 degree temperature swing during one lap.
Wow.
You heard that little kind of evil laugh, you might say, from Lazarus Lake there at the end of that excerpt. That was, again, 4 years ago, and now Jasmine Paris has done it. He talks in our conversation you're about to hear about how she was able to do it and what it was like seeing so many finishers, and maybe that cool that changed the course for Barkley. But we also talk a lot about his transcon, what it's like, because he's, you know, again, almost 70, has some back problems, trying to do about at least 15 or 20 miles a day. And so for the Barkley Marathon, you know, they've had no finishers from 2018 to 2022. And, you know, I thought to myself, could I ever do Barkley? Well, the most I've ever done so far in one day, I guess, time, is about 36 miles. That's my distance PR I just achieved about a month or two ago. And I have done two marathons in 2 days, or within about 30 hours, 55 miles. That's going to actually happen for me again in just a few weeks that I'll kind of have a recap episode on. And again, I have some friends right now that are preparing to do the solo run across Georgia, which is 277 miles. They'll do that in the course of 4.5 days, but you have 2.5 days to complete Barkley. And of course, the great virtual race across Tennessee that I've talked about on this podcast, Lazarus Lake, was also the creator of that. That kind of spawned me on to actually be a run streaker. So since that virtual event that started during the coronavirus pandemic, I did a 762-day run streak where I have to run at least a mile a day. That ended a couple summers ago, and now I'm about to hit almost 700 days on my current run streak. So I guess I can thank Laz for getting me into this daily running, and now he's doing a bunch of daily walking. He says that he only runs when he's getting out of the way of a car now. But again, I want to get right to my conversation with the man that some call the Leonardo da Vinci of pain. That's what Trail Runner Magazine calls him. Lazarus Lake, a great guy who you'll love to hear this conversation. Well, it's an honor to talk to you, Gary Cantrell, a.k.a. Lazarus Lake. Once again, we first chatted back in spring of 2020 when kind of the world went dark with the COVID pandemic, and we talked about the great virtual race across Tennessee, and you walked across the USA in 2018, which took you about 4 months, and we're going to talk about Barkley Marathon and all kinds of different things, but I wanted to talk to you first about this this transcontinental walk. You started in Delaware about 3+ weeks ago, heading to, I believe, San Francisco, hopefully by the end of summer. So, well, first of all, how's it going so far? I think, are you in or near Ohio?
I believe that when I check the map tonight, I'll be about 80 miles still from Ohio.
Gotcha. So what does your average day look like? I mean, are you, in terms of food and stopping and walking with a cane, what are the logistics for you?
The run part is actually the only relaxed part of the day, because I'm starting at 0700 and walking till 1700, taking about 30 minutes out for lunch. Hopefully, if I can get out of all the rough stuff I'm going through, hit some good places, I can walk a little longer. But it doesn't come out to a whole lot longer, because from the time you leave the road until the time you get back is jam-packed full to try to get everything done and in time to get some sleep and hit the road again.
So, Laz, a lot of folks, you know, may think, okay, well, you know, Laz is well known and does, you know, is a race director and can kind of chill and relax and be kind of retired. But I guess the question is, why do the Transcon again? I think you're almost 70 years old. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm fixing to turn 70. So, you know, you either do something or sit home and wait to die. And I'd rather do something. So here we are. I'm questioning my judgment of the things I picked to do.
Is it, do you have some injuries going into this? And or what are some of the physical challenges that you're dealing with? Because I know that, you know, this is not easy. I mean, you're on your feet for a long time every day.
I think the biggest thing that's kind of caught me by surprise is the last 6 years, I got more older than I noticed along the way.
I'm not able to go near as far in a day as I did 6 years ago. So just kind of making adjustments and trying to see what I can do to keep going down the road and get where I can get.
Do you have a certain, like, is this mostly like a goal for yourself, or do you maybe hope this kind of creates a message for people that are in their 60s or 70s that, listen, life's not over and you can take on these huge challenges?
I don't know that there's a lot of people my age that can do a lot better things than I do. It's more of a message that just because you can't do what the great ones do, you can still do what you can do.
And you've got folks with you, a kind of a crew. Are you and I think you've got folks that join you in these small little towns all along the way. Like, you're in West Virginia now, right?
I am still in West Virginia. It's a long state, and contrary to rumors, it's not flat. I know all your life you've probably heard West Virginia's flat, but it's not.
So far in your, you know, 3+ weeks of doing this, what are some of the best parts of this and some of the worst parts of what you're going through on this Transcon that maybe other folks would want to try?
The best part's around every corner. You don't know what's coming next. Every little city sign, I think I put one yesterday. You see the little sign that you're coming to another city. You don't know if it's two or three houses. There's an old business district, historical markers, just seeing what's next. And then the people you meet. The people in West Virginia have been really good to me. But that's kind of America. Everywhere you go, people are really good.
Yeah, talk about that some, about kind of seeing America. I mean, you've done this before, but seeing America in this way, kind of walking across America, which sounds, you know, I mean, this is 3,000 miles or 4,800 K. So, I mean, what's it like seeing America, I mean, literally on foot?
It is a fantastic experience. My feet are not as happy about it as the rest of it, but you know how feet are. They're team players. They act like they're doing all the work.
Does your wife and friends, do they think you're crazy?
I guess they might question my judgment sometimes. But out here on the road, there's a lot of living every day.
Yeah, and I think we had talked about this last time, and like in over the course of 60 years of walking and running, you've completed, you know, definitely more than 100,000 miles. You know, is this something that, you know, you just really have for a long time had a love for, you know, running, walking, ultras, even like, you know, this is now the LASCON 2024?
I like to get out and move and see things and be physically active. I don't have much of a fondness for pointless exercise, so I like to do something.
And are you getting like a plenty of sleep and food, or do you, is there a certain kind of food or snack that you like are craving as you're going, you know, 20 miles a day?
Tonight I had a steak and a salad and a baked potato.
Nice.
And near the ocean, I ate a lot of seafood.
And I want to read, Laz, you know, a lot of folks maybe or may not be following you on Facebook or on the website, but I just want to read a little bit. This is from, I think, the previous night. Says, because I love, you know, it's like poetry, the stuff you're writing, whether you know it or not. He said, I got a real surprise when I started out today. I thought I had one more big mountain to cross, but yesterday we stopped at the crest and not gone past. 100 yards into today's run, I saw a sight spreading out in front of me that made my heart sing. I could see to Ohio, probably not, but I felt like it. And nothing in front of me was anything approaching the mountains I've been crossing for the past week. Sure, my back reminded me the years had not gone anywhere by the bottom of the last big descent, but the joy of overcoming an obstacle was as sweet as it has ever been. So, I mean, what's that like for you to be able to kind of like tell your story and just talk about like what you're going through and, like you said, seeing America and letting folks know just kind of, you know, the ins and outs of what you're doing?
I enjoyed it. It was something I committed myself to this year, was to spend a certain amount of time every day writing up as I went. And so I've been trying to just pass the story along. When I came over the top of that mountain and I could just see the hills going on and on until they were out of sight, I thought, I should take a picture of this. Of course, if you've seen my pictures, I'm not a photographer. But then I thought, it can't capture the feeling because it's not just the view. It was that feeling at that moment that, hey, I drew that stuff. That all those mountains were done. It's hard to describe. And then of course you got to go down that big mountain and beat yourself to death and pay for it. But there's special moments, something like this, that makes all the work worth it.
Absolutely, and you're, I think, roughly, give or take, about 400 miles of mapped course completed. And this is, again, you know, you've got about 2,600 miles to go. So do you, you know, and, you know, whether people are 5K runners or marathon runners, or they competed in like something like Barkley, you know, you always have a moment or moments throughout that journey of where you kind of doubt yourself, or like you hurt and you have to kind of overcome that. Have you had some of those moments so far? And do you think, okay, I'm going to do this regardless of how I feel, my body or my mind, I'm going to get this 3,000 mile journey done?
I really don't approach it but one day at a time. We were talking about that tonight at dinner, that you have a different, I say it's measured time like Aborigines. There's today and yesterday and before. And the things before that, I can't even put them in guess as to how many days ago they were. And then at the end of today, you have tomorrow, because you got to start planning what you're going to do, where you're going to get, how you're going to achieve. It shrinks your world down. The other thing, really, with the blog on Facebook, is there's no time, and the days are so filled and busy. You don't get to read the news. You don't get to watch TV. You get separated from all the crap that's burdening down everybody else's world. And all you see is what a great place this is and what a great time it is to be here. And so I guess all of it together is. It's both the challenge and the reward at the same time.
Yeah, like you said, there's a lot to be said for kind of unplugging and just kind of, you know, enjoying the scenery. Like you said, I think you said in one of your posts, like, the pictures don't do it justice. I mean, you got to see it for yourself, and we say that all the time. And so you started this journey, this LASCON 2024. I believe shortly after the latest Barkley marathons, right? I mean, that was the plan?
Yeah, there was very little time in between. I started out on April the 1st, assuming that I was going to need more time because I'm older than I was the last time. I've been surprised my body is further from what it used to be than I thought it would be. But I have high hopes that going through all these hills is like the little race car that you put it on the floor and you push it back and forth several times, building up the flywheel. And when I hit Ohio, it's going to be like setting that car down and I'll shoot off.
It's like, you know, I'm in Georgia. And so a lot of times, you know, they say if you train and run a lot in the summertime when it's 90 degrees or the humidity is through the roof, that pays dividends in the fall and the winter. Same for you. You're overcoming these hills, and so when you get to the flats, it's going to be like you're going to be like relieved, I guess.
Yeah, it's probably as realistic as everything else I thought going in, but I'll get up every day and do what I do.
Now, will weather impact you at all in terms of, you know, I know you said it was colder than you wanted in parts of West Virginia, but does that, like if it's raining or anything like that, will that prevent you from going further on that day?
So far, I've been really lucky with the rain. Hoping that continues. If I can start making up some distance on my goal, then it would be hard to miss a day. The biggest thing about spending days in the rain is the difficulty of keeping your feet together, keeping your equipment taken care of. But I guess, you know, it's like every other day, when you get up, whatever you face is what you face.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, the Barkley Marathons, which was created back in 1986, I believe, as it's kind of been dubbed as the most challenging, toughest course and race in America, or the world, probably, for that matter. And, you know, after having, usually you only have, you know, zero or one finisher out of the 40 that participate. But this year, a new high of 5 runners completing all 5 loops, including the first ever woman, Jasmine Paris. So, I mean, what was your takeaway as race director, now that you've kind of had a month to kind of digest it a little bit and think about it? Was this something, and this was kind of unusual this time of year?
There was a lot of factors that worked together. We had a lot of really top flight runners that had multiple attempts and were due to finish. The weather was perfect. And then Jasmine just came in and put on one of the great athletic performances I've ever seen.
Was this something where you look at that, because obviously you want to make it challenging. You want to make this something difficult that it's hard to achieve, maybe impossible for some people. And it's kind of like, you know, we're right here from next to what used to be Fort Benning's, now Fort Moore, for Army Rangers. You know, they make it very difficult for them to be able to, you know, become Rangers for a reason. And same thing with like the Barkley course at Frozen Head State Park in Tennessee. So does this kind of make you think, well, maybe let's make it more challenging, or make it so that we only have one finisher in 2025, or maybe not?
Yeah. If the weather hit about an hour after the race was over, if it had come 12 hours earlier, there would have been one finisher or none. So now you don't want to make it unfair. It's a lot of things came together to see an unusual finish.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the weather does play a factor in it, for sure. And, you know, you were talking about Jasmine, and I mean, she did this, I mean, 60-hour time limit, obviously 5 loops, and, you know, give or take, you might be talking about 130 miles and really treacherous kind of conditions and kind of trying to figure out your way around night and day. But she finished with just 99 seconds to spare. I mean, that's pretty dramatic for any race, much less Barkley. So what were you thinking, like, with like an hour to go, or when you saw her coming around the corner?
Oh, and until there were people scattered out down the road towards where she would come off the trail. And when it got to 3 minutes to go and she hadn't come into sight yet, we thought it was over. And I don't think anyone there was not shedding tears the whole thing. She ran the last, about 11 or 12 miles, something like 45 minutes faster than the guy who won.
Wow.
She was, I think, without having experienced it, it's hard to really comprehend the kind of pressure she ran under for 60 hours. She ended up with 99 seconds to spare. It was that close the whole way. She knew it. So it just hard to believe someone could take not just the physical punishment, but the psychological stress, pressure.
Yeah, I mean, she's a 40-year-old veterinarian. I mean, now that ceiling has been, you know, smashed in terms of the first female finisher, obviously the race went on for, you know, I guess 40 years without having a female finisher. I mean, is that something you are glad that that's finally happened, or it's kind of like, well, you know, it's something that we weren't sure was ever going to happen.
We weren't sure it was ever going to happen, but it would take an outlier among outliers to do it. Glad that it was achieved. Nobody should hold their breath waiting on the next one.
And is it something where, you know, and having five finishers, and you talked about the field being really strong. I mean, this is not, I mean, it's, you know, you don't know even when tell people about, you don't even know when this is going to, the uncertainty of this race and what it looks like out there and when you're going to even start and blow the conch shell. I mean, that all plays a role in, you know, these folks and what they do out there.
It's, the most difficult thing for an athlete to deal with is uncertainty. And the Barkley is kind of built around uncertainty. They don't know exactly what the course will be until the day before the race. They don't know when it will start until an hour before the start. And when they hit a checkpoint, then they know exactly where they are, and they know they're on course. And when they walk away from that checkpoint, they're not sure until they get to the next one.
Yeah. And with, you've got a three-time finisher, you've got Jasmine. What, you know, when you see these folks, you know, whether it be a fun run or the people that finish, do all five loops at Frozen Head State Park, what do you think that says about, like, the human spirit? Like, people physically and mentally pushing themselves just beyond the boundary? I mean, like, because you've got to kind of go to a place that maybe a lot of people can't or won't go.
Well, a lot of it is in mastering a lot of different skill sets. I think the requirement for determination and physical conditioning, all of the physical aspects, you can't overestimate or overstate the importance, but you also have to be a person who's a problem solver on the feet, a person who recognizes the parts of the aspect they're not strong at and gets better. There's a certain kind of person, and we were talking about this just the other day while walking down the road, the remarkable number of PhDs that have finished. Because that's kind of the kind of mindset it takes.
You're going to have to be, like, surgical about it, right?
You have to be willing to do what it takes to accomplish your goal.
And you may not even know what that is until you arrive at that spot in of the race or whatever else. And what is there any kind of thought into, like, you know, now that you've been doing this for four decades? I mean, you got the backyard and you got a bunch, several other races, but with the Barkley marathons, you know, almost 40 years now, any thought into the future? I mean, you're going to do this till you're 80, 90 or 100, no idea what's going to happen next?
Oh, we've been working. Carly and Carl Laniak is becoming piece by piece the Barkley guy so that it can continue like it is. And really, he did the biggest part this year of the work. It's been several years ago since we started working in him and Dave and our youth movement of guys to put out the books, because it's not a job 70-year-olds can do.
Yeah, because you still got, I mean, do you still have do you still get to pick out the books? The names of the books are always very telling.
Bit by bit, we're conspiring on it. And more and more of it was Carl's doing, and less is mine. I think that he will be able to continue it with the same tradition it's always had.
Yeah. And speaking of tradition, since COVID pandemic kind of shut down a lot of races 4 years ago, and you guys came up, you know, as the brainchild of the GVRAT, the great virtual race across Tennessee, and some people did back across Tennessee. People, you know, from wherever they were in the world ran or walked those miles and virtually. And I did also crawl the circumpolar race around the world with a team. And we did, got the big wooden map and all the different medals that fit into the map, which was so cool. And so now kind of doing that again. So while you're doing this Transcon, folks are also doing their own not a Transcon, but they're going across Tennessee and other places, right?
Well, the GVRAT this year has got the same course that I'm following right now, except I have a month head start. Hopefully I'll get far enough nobody beats me to Cincinnati. And then we will have the whole Transcon, where if people want to do their own 70-year-old adventure, whatever age they are, they can sign on and run this course virtually from home. And I'm scouting it out for them so I can tell them what to expect.
They can go back and look at your pictures of the small town gas stations or restaurants or the signs that you keep seeing. And so they will start that May 1st. And so are you looking forward to, like, once other people kind of join in, maybe they're trying to pass you or catch you, and maybe they'll catch you and then they'll just stay with you for the duration of months, right?
I'm hoping that nobody catches me, but I've got to recognize the possibility. Yeah. And but my ace in the hole is they all probably still believe the rumors that West Virginia is flat.
Yeah. So are there any places coming up that you're looking forward to in terms of certain cities or areas, or maybe you have a friend that is in a certain state or something?
I'm looking forward to get to Clarksburg, West Virginia. It's about 40 feet, I think, from where I'm starting tomorrow.
You know, it's what's crazy about that is I worked my first job in television 25 years ago when we were both younger in Bridgeport, Clarksburg, West Virginia. I worked at a TV station right there in that area. Yeah, I know it well. And it had I worked there for about a year, and we had quite a bit of snow, I think, for, you know, a month off and on. But yeah, it's West Virginia. I think the slogan is still wild and wonderful. So see, you're in a good state for that.
And you can tell everybody you as the rumors are true. It's perfectly flat.
No, that's definitely a rumor. So yeah, and you start off pretty early in the day. Are you, you know, just real quick, are you walking at a pretty, you know, slow or fast pace, or just kind of depends on the you know, the terrain?
Well, when there's hills, it slows me down some. The amount of road shoulder and traffic really has more of an effect on how fast you can go. But I'm an old man with no run left in his legs, so this is not, if I'm doing anything, I'm doing, this is something anybody can do.
Yeah. And as other folks get started with their Transcon or GVRAT in the next, you know, week or so, what would be your message to them as you're actually in the places maybe that they're going to be virtually? What would be, you know, in terms of, you know, we do have races back open, obviously, post-pandemic, but being able to kind of do this virtually is still kind of a cool concept.
Yeah, it's, I hope that people will, you know, we don't want to have something where people just send in money and later on they get a medal, you know, hook it up to their GPS watch, and but that people will follow the map and look at the places and imagine going through there. If it comes close enough, go to some of it and see it yourself. Like I say, it's a, this is a great country to live in and a great time to live here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're getting to see it firsthand for sure. So, Lazarus Lake, thank you so much for your time. I know we've been trying to get together for a little bit, but I'm glad it worked out and that you got the key fix to get into your room and hopefully dish out some more photos and some more words of wisdom. And then you can get started a bright and early again in the morning and get going. You've only got 2,600 miles to go. So, I mean, it's not that much further. You're almost there.
I just got 20 some. Try to get something over 20 tomorrow.
Great. Well, if anybody can do it, you can. And we're all rooting for you. And I'm glad we can share some of your story and an update for the folks to listen to. And we wish you Godspeed. And hopefully you can get some rest and keep those miles going.
All right. Well, thank you. And I better go. I got to get a shower, make a post, and get my tired bones in bed.
There you go. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Have a pep talk with my feet because they're not team players.
That's right. You coach them up. Coach them up. All right. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Now, Laz doesn't want to make Barkley impossible, but, you know, he wants to make it difficult, but it already is in terms of the changes they could possibly do. It's more than 60,000 feet of elevation. It's like climbing Mount Everest two or three times in the matter of, you know, just a couple days. And it's 100 to 130 miles. So a pretty daunting thing for sure. But I appreciate Lazarus Lake, Gary, spending some time with us after he ate dinner. And he, again, is in West Virginia still as this episode comes out, headed towards Ohio. We wish him all the best as he hopes to finish by the maybe the end of the summer. I know he's going to do a great job. And I wanted to give you a little excerpt, about 15, 20 minutes, from my very first conversation with Lazarus Lake. You can go back and listen to episode number 26 of Run the Race that actually first aired back in May of 2020. He's also featured in episode 36, where we talked about running across Tennessee and Georgia with Lazarus Lake and a local running icon, John Teeples, where he talks about had finishers from 80 countries for virtual races like the GVRAT and the CRAW that I took part in, the Circumpolar Race Around the World. And so you're going to hear him talk about a little more about how he started running and the pain of doing the mile, how Lazarus got his nickname, the mental and spiritual side of running, wisdom on pushing the goals, his Transcon journey, his first one in 2018, how the Barkley Marathons got started, the historic inspiration for the route, and more inside details and personal stuff about him and running.
You started running as in middle school back in the 1960s. So tell us, you know, why you became a runner and what you really liked about it. And obviously, it's for you, it's been a lifelong love.
Well, I did my first run of a mile, measured mile with a watch on it, when I was 12, and my dad had seen him and all his buddies at work. Everybody saw this feature on the evening news one night about some family in Texas that did this crazy thing called jogging, and it was probably the first real running boom. Although to call it a boom by today's standards, it was nothing but lots of people, and got out and started doing their 1 mile a day. And I went with my dad, and he just wanted to break 8 minutes for a mile. And the first day I went out there, I broke 8 minutes for the mile and beat my dad.
Nice.
We're a very competitive family, but not the kind of family where you let the kids win.
Oh, so it was a legit win.
I never beat him at anything before, but I could run a mile faster than him.
Wow.
And I kind of toyed around with it in the ninth grade. I think I ran like a 5:15 mile, 5:25, something like that. But it was pretty disorganized in high school. Being from a very sports-oriented family, I thought you're supposed to try to make some team. And you know, what I always dreamed of being was a football player, but I was a 5-foot-tall, 70-pound sophomore.
Whoa.
Yeah, there's... you look at the sports, and even in wrestling, there's like a 20-pound difference between that and the lowest weight class. There was no other sport to pick but running. So I went out for track and cross country and had a very mediocre high school career. I did break a 5-minute mile, but you know, nothing spectacular.
That's spectacular in my eyes for sure.
Hey, I think if you're on the outside and you see all the people that run 4-minute miles, you don't appreciate it's really hard to break a 5-minute mile.
Yeah, I think I had a friend once that said it hurts when you can't breathe, and that's kind of what has to happen when you run that fast.
The mile will always be, in my mind, the most painful event in running. And that third lap around the track is as close to hell as you can actually get without dying.
And people do that on purpose, right?
And people do it on purpose.
And I know your given name is Gary Cantrell, but obviously people around the world know you as Lazarus Lake or Laz. So how did you get that nickname? Was it something you've had for a long time? Or
it was an accident. When they started email, you have your email at work, and it would be your name or your title, or your name and your title. And so as email started to get into use with people outside of just a work environment, I just looked one day, I said, I have a bunch of personal emails on my work email account. I need to get my own account. So I set up the Hotmail account I still use. And when it came time to put in your name, I typed in my name, and then I thought, oh no, hell, this internet stuff, who knows where the hell these emails go when you send them. So I should just put a name in there that's not mine, that people will recognize that I know. So if someone I know gets an email, they'll know it's from me, but if someone's picking these things out of the air, they won't know who it's from.
You need some privacy, you know?
So I just picked Lazarus Lake as a name to put on there. Something was distinctive. People was, you know, it was not like John Smith or something. And then I went along for some years, and email became more and more of a thing. And I got on the Ultra email list and did stuff. And one day I went to a race and realized there were people who thought that was actually my name. Because you forget about it, you don't write everybody and say, this is not my real name.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you're known as being very witty. Some people have called you a genius or a sadist for some of the things, the challenges you put out there. You know, for runners, you know, maybe there's people that are brand new at running, or you obviously have elites that you've dealt with a lot. For any of them, what would you say? I mean, is there feel like there's a mental or spiritual side of running for people, you know, out there and kind of being out there either on your own or in a race or anything?
Oh, I think, yeah, it's a, you know, the world is my church, so I go to church every day. But I, you know, never felt like I could feel closer to God inside of a building. So this is, and it's, I don't know if you would call it spiritual or just a matter of personal growth to find out what you can do and always be looking for things. I think when you get, as you go through your whole life, and even more important when you're older, having those goals out always having something that you're working towards. That 5-minute mile doesn't just happen, or the 4-minute mile, whatever it is out there that you can attain. If you want to do your best, you have to work for it. You have to do the things it takes to get it.
Absolutely. And it's I think it's the, kind of that steady and the journey, I guess, is really more important than the finish line for a lot of folks.
In the end, the journey is the best part. If things will straighten out and I get to do my Transcon next year, that's going to be a lot of fun. But either way, about a year and a half of working for it, it has been really enjoyable. And I like where I am right now, that I'm in decent enough condition to go out and do my 60 miles a week and not really suffer discomfort from it.
Now, did I know you walked across the USA, was it in 2018, is that correct?
2018, yes.
So what was that like? I mean, how long did that take you, and were you averaging a certain amount of miles a day?
Took me 4 months. I ended up averaging about 27 miles a day, and it was a race every day. I did pretty much 14 hours a day, which is really a little bit beyond, at least for me, it was beyond I could reach.
It was a difficult challenge that you completed over the 4 months in 2018.
Yes. This one I'm doing next summer is going to be a different animal. I'm planning out to average about between 21 and 22 miles a day and throw in a lot of easy days along the way. I wanted to do one as hard as I could do just to see if I could do it. I wish I'd done it when I was young, and I could have done it in a quarter of the time. But I don't know if I would have been mentally prepared to withstand that kind of beating.
Yeah. And I know I'm sure you probably are hoping to finish by the time the Barkley Marathon's come back around in April, hopefully be able to have it next year. And I know you guys, I mean, it's been a legendary race now. Only 15 finishers, I believe, in 34 years. You're the mastermind behind what some call the toughest race in the world. So how did that get started? I mean, was this just a kind of a, like you said, with the great virtual race across Tennessee, just an idea you had?
Yeah. Time to think. It's a dangerous thing. I don't need time to think. I did a lot of backpacking trips when I was younger. And one of the places that we would go was Frozen Head State Park. It wasn't a park then, it was just a forest. And when we went with other people, we saw these trails on the map around the perimeter that were just, the contour lines looked like shading. And we said, man, that's got to be some kind of a hike. But we had to plan a trip for just me and Raw Dog because normal people are not really drawn to that kind of thing. And so we went out there and we did the first Barkley Loop. We started one morning and finished the next morning, camped overnight in the middle, backpacked it. And all the way we thought, what a race. What a race this would be.
A challenging one at that. And I know that there is a connection to, I think, kind of sitting on the course or right next to the course is the Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, where James Earl Ray was there in the 1970s. So there's a connection with, like, the escape, I guess, with him and some other inmates, right?
Well, in 76, when he escaped, we had been backpacking up there a lot already, and we kind of followed on the news like I think most of the nation did, but especially in Tennessee, it was a big deal every day that he was out. And I kept saying, they caught him 8.5 miles away. So there's no way in that length of time I could have been 100 miles from there. But there were a lot of factors I didn't understand. I was young and dumb. And when you're young and dumb, you think you can do anything.
And it was, I guess it was kind of an underground race for quite a while. I mean, people competed in every, you know, 40 people handpicked every year. And then in 2014, you had this documentary film, the Barkley Marathons, The Race That Eats Its Young. And so that brought this worldwide attention. It was on Netflix. Now it's on Amazon Prime. So did that change things for you for this mystical race? You know, maybe change it forever?
It changed some aspects. I know that people say, well, don't you get 1,000 more applications? Well, we always had a large application because people that do that kind of stuff, they've known about it for a long time. And the extra applications we get are mostly not, they're not serious applications. They, you know, they, I have no experience, but I'm really, really tough and determined. Yeah, sometimes I'm ugly and I write them back and say, yeah, we hadn't thought about letting tough and determined people in there before. It's been kind of good. I take people that are really have no experience and try to steer them. I say, you know, there's other ultra marathons that you can run, and here's where you would look to find them if you just build some credentials and get back to me. And you know, when you have a resume, we'll certainly consider you. And they, of course, they get out of. A lot of them are just, well, I only want the final reward. I don't want anything that goes along the way. I just want the final reward. And they're gone. They can go through life looking for things where you get the reward without doing the work. But a lot of them, you have to forgive me being breathless. I just got up that last stupid hill before the house.
Okay, you got the 6 miles in. All right.
We live on top of a hill.
We eat hills for breakfast, right? For lunch.
No, eventually the hill eats you for lunch.
There you go. It does. It does.
I'm not as gracefully as the hill. It's still as tough as it ever was.
Well, while you're catching your breath, I wanted to ask you about, I had a friend that wanted me to ask you about the tough application process for a race like the Barkley Marathons and kind of, well, are you the unique way, I guess. You only have 40 handpicked runners each year, and they have to write an essay. But the entry fee is interesting, but only $1.60 and a license plate, I think, to get in. So are these just kind of, you know, fun, unique things kind of that come out of your mind to do this for this race?
Well, see, we're actually sticking it to the runners with the $1.60 because we tell them it's $1 per mile, and there's a 100-miler and a 60-miler. But the 60-miler is actually contained within the 100. So we're double charging them that last 60 cents.
Well, you know, I mean, it's your fee, right?
I'm a con artist, man. I'm you just don't know how many Dr. Peppers that's bought for me over the years.
That's right, yeah, or cigarettes, right?
Or Camels and Dr. Peppers. I spend it right away. We don't give them a refund no matter what happens.
Now, for people that have not been out there to the foothills of Tennessee, Frozen Head State Park, or maybe they haven't seen the documentary about the Barkley Marathons. So this is a total elevation gain of 60,000 feet, which I think is like equal to climbing Mount Everest twice. So, I mean, really, for people that are just kind of learning about Barkley Marathons, I mean, how tough is the terrain there, there at the park in Tennessee in the foothills?
You have alternating layers of coal and shale and sandstone. So as the hills erode, the softer stuff erodes faster, and the sandstone, which sounds soft, but it doesn't erode very fast because the water can't penetrate it. And so you have really steep pitches between what are countless false summits when you hit the layers of sandstone. The mountains are not really impressive to look at, and in the early days you'd have people come from, you know, the Rockies or the Himalayas or different mountain range, the Alps. And so these are like foothills. But, you know, the measure of a hill is in the running.
Yeah.
And pretty much everyone knows coming in now that they're not scary to look at, but they are hard.
Yeah, and five loops to reach that the yellow gate that's at the start and the finish. And for you, I know you're, you know, retired, I guess, from, you know, the accounting, those kind of jobs. But you've got grown kids and grandkids. And so what do you do in your spare time? Or do you have any spare time, especially with this virtual race across Tennessee?
Well, we're putting on six races a year. And we've been doing the backyard ultras, which – prior to COVID, it had really taken off. There were 118 races in, I want to say, 37 countries. And I've been going around and helping people get those off the ground. And we made our original one the world championship and had golden ticket events. And so just building that up and seeing it go, I think it'll... If everything comes back to normal, it'll be a nice, viable entity and probably be somebody's job. I don't expect to be around long enough to really reap the rewards from it, but the building it is the fun.
And again, that conversation happening back in spring of 2020, almost 4 years ago, hard to believe. And he did most of that conversation while he was walking, getting in his, I think he was trying to do 6 miles a day for the virtual race across. And a lot of folks are maybe going to join in on this TransCon starting in May of 2024. And I also wanted to read to you a little, some of the excerpt of, he's got his blog entries on Facebook. You can follow him, Lazarus Lake, easy to find. He talks about just recently, a couple days ago, he got up and put on some new glasses and the lens fell out, so it wasn't really a good sign to start the day. He talked about this being the most challenging combination of roads and traffic of his trek so far when he was in West Virginia, these continuous small hills. He said, the rough surfaces we had to run on made it the most challenging day for my back so far. Tomorrow I should start leaving the Pennsylvanian rock and transitioning into Permian rock. That is 300 million years old. The Permian was a time of strange monsters, he describes. He's a history buff for sure. He says he had to battle to get through Grafton, West Virginia, on shoulderless roads with heavy traffic. And he had high hopes of reaching a specific goal for the day, only to have the afternoon drag on and being out in the countryside until you top a hill. And then right there in the middle of a town. So he's definitely seeing America in a really unique way. And again, we wish him Godspeed, all the best on this journey. And again, I appreciate, wanted to thank you, the listener, for joining us on this ride for Run the Race. The verse in Hebrews in the Bible talks about running the race of perseverance, finishing strong, following after Jesus, running the race of life, spiritually, physically, mentally, trying to push through, like Lazarus was talking about, and showing the human spirit, what God has given us, this body and this mind and this soul. So I appreciate you being on this journey with us, running the race. And I would love to hear your feedback again through Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And as we do on pretty much all of the 200 podcast episodes we've had, I'm going to close now in prayer. Dear God, we just pray now. Pray for Lazarus as he is safely traverses across the country and the people are inspired by him. And Lord God, we just thank you we glorify you for being able to, our bodies being able to, made to do stuff like this and face challenges, and that you help us to be mentally and physically strong, whatever we have to do, whatever we go through in life, through work or races or family life, Lord God, that you will give us that protection, that strength, that peace that passes all understanding. And I just thank you for this platform, this podcast, to be able to talk about you, to talk about fitness and health and helping us all to be better, hopefully. And just appreciate the opportunity you've given me to run every single day. And just thank you, Lord, for your many blessings you pour upon us that we sometimes take for granted. In your name we pray. Amen. Thank you guys so much again for listening to Run the Race. And didn't know we'd be going this long doing it for more than 4 years now, 200 episodes, going to be continue to go strong, and looking forward to some great guests and maybe some special things coming up in the next few weeks as well, just like you heard from Lazarus Lake. So are you ready for even more? So we'll see you next time.